The Peacock Flies on today's episode, number 427 with Luca Garza. Been a long time coming trying to get this guy on the podcast. We finally nailed him down, just coming off of his second professional season of basketball. You're going to get to hear a lot from this man, both from his time at Iowa and his time now. This is an easy one. Sit back, relax. Let's have a day. Let's go. And welcome back to the Washed Up Walk-Ons, a guest that we have wanted to bring on this show for a very long time. Hard to get in touch with, a man that is busy, a man that does a lot. He's been doing a lot. This man has been, decimating the G League this past year. Wanted to have him in the, back when he was a Hawk, but we got him now. Luca Garza joins the show. Luca, welcome in, man.
Thank you, man. Thank you for having me.
We're pretty stoked for this one. Glad to have you on. Pump up some of what you're doing right now, both for prep athletes, kids that are trying to get into college, got some camps coming up, but also just talk about what you've got going on yourself. I mentioned it in the intro. What do we got here? I got the stats pulled up. 31.2 a game this past season. Dude, save some for the rest of the guys, man. I mean, talk about this past season.
Yeah, no, I think this year I definitely had a different approach and mentality to the G League. I kind of wanted to show that I didn't belong there. And so every time I went down, I kind of went down with that in mind and played the game the right way. And it kind of just worked out for me. It was great. And obviously started the year in the G League, then went up and had a lot of opportunity with the Timberwolves with Cat's injury and Rudy was banged up midway through the year. So I was able to play in a lot of high-pressure situations, get some good minutes out there on the NBA floor as well, which worked out well for me. And then, I kind of finished what I started in the G League and made sure, I kind of left no stone unturned, kind of showing everybody that, I don't belong here.
I love that sentiment. I don't belong here. This isn't my league, right? It's the ultimate chip on the shoulder. Like, go out every night and you've got something to prove. And
I mean,
you can answer for yourself, but I feel like you did that. I feel like we accomplished that.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously the G League is a great tool for developing and getting better. And I use that, to work on a lot of parts of my game. But at the same time, you kind of also want to, show that, there's more you can do on the NBA level. And I'm glad I was able to do that both in the G League and in the NBA this year and show that I belong. And I'm continuing to try to prove it right.
Got something, Kev?
It's 31 points a game. Harder to improve on that. Like, how are we liking our chances next year being on an active roster?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think similar to this year, I'm going to be ready whenever my opportunity comes. And, we're working on, what the contract situation looks like for next year. Obviously, there's a lot that has to go into that. But I hope I'm with Minnesota again. This year, like I said, it was midway through the year. There was lots of opportunity that was there, and I made the most of it. So I think I'm just going to continue to keep that mindset if I have to go down to the G League, I'll go down to the G League and kind of do the same thing. But, I expect to just, be there and be ready for any opportunity that comes my way in the NBA.
You had this year, I mean, again, in the G League too, you had a huge bump, a significant, very clear bump in performance and stats from year one to year two that sort of mimicked your jump in productivity from your sophomore year to your junior year in college. Do you see any similarities between those two jumps?
Yeah, no, I think that's kind of like the story of my career in general, even in high school. I averaged 4 points a game as a freshman in high school and 20 and 10 as a sophomore. So I've always, been able to make big jumps just because, I think one thing is you learn from experience a lot. And I think my rookie year, I gained a lot of really good experience both on the NBA floor and in the G League. I played, a lot of heavy minutes in both. Obviously, there was different points in the year with the Pistons that, especially with COVID happened, where I was playing 40 minutes a game, and that was still the most I played in an NBA game. So I think from that experience, I was able to learn a lot and kind of take that into the next year. And I always take it into the summer, and that's where I work on the stuff that I just experience just did and build up on it, and I kind of see where I think my game can flourish, what I think I can do to be able to go out there and excel. So I think that's always just been common in the way that I kind of evaluate myself after each year and what I need to do to go into the next year and get better. So I'm doing that already and starting that process as well to continue to make the most of any opportunity that comes my way.
What are your big focuses on for the summer then, before next season rolls around? What are your big goals for improving on?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of things. Obviously, with my body, is just continuing to maximize the God-given talent that I got. Obviously, I'm not the most athletic guy, but there's things you can do to continue to work on that and maximize, whether it's with recovery, strength and conditioning, all of those kind of things. Obviously, for me on the defensive end, I think there's little techniques that I can get better at, active hands, like being, you see Jokic, how good of a defender he is. And I think people don't talk about it enough. He has one of the best defensive ratings as a center in the league. And that's just good to how smart he is. And he doesn't move, that great, but with his hands and with his body position, how he makes people constantly have to make decisions when they go in the paint, and it kind of, slows them down. And I think that's the key to being a good positional defender in the league. So I think continuing to work on that, obviously offensively, I want to, I shot 47% in the G League this year, about 37 in the league. I think continuing to improve that, getting to 45 plus consistently every single season is obviously a goal of mine. And I think, another thing that I think I can add and be better at is my passing ability. I've always been a guy who's been told to score and put in positions to score. But I think the more that I can maximize my ability to pass the ball and get others involved, especially now in the league, centers are, in the action a lot, whether it's through delay or, pinch post action, different things, where there's different handoffs, different reads that you can make. So I think, the more complete player I am offensively, the more it's going to, help get myself more opportunity.
Mentioned at the beginning of that, not being the most athletic guy, you're not an avid listener of this show, but that's kind of what our whole thing is based off of around here. Yeah.
That's
guys.
Why we're doing the show and not.
Yeah. If we were God given the most, the best athletes, we'd probably still be playing with some of our former teammates in the league. We're not. So here we are. I love that though. Like that's like the true essence, right? Like guys that have to work for it. And like everything is earned. Like there's some dudes who they just have it, right? And maybe they don't have to work as hard. A guy like you, you know that you earn everything that you get. I think that shows pretty evidently through your play. Maybe most highlighted by how many bloody noses you get, dude. Fucking does that get annoying? Why do you get so, why are you so beat up all the time?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's just kind of the brand of basketball I play. I'm a physical guy. I like to, mix it up in the paint, and that's the Big Ten. And
facts.
That's just what it is. And even when I got to the league, like last year in the G League, like I think I got stitches like 6 or 7 times. Honestly, a funny story. The first possession I got in a preseason game against the Spurs. And when I say first possession, literally, I checked in on one end. We ran one way, and then there was a timeout. And I got hit in the face, like on some sort of box out. And I go to the timeout, and the trainer's like, oh, we're going to have to stitch that up. And I'm like, there's 3 minutes left in this game. We're not doing that until after the game. Just give me something to put in my mouth, and I'll hold it in there. So literal first possession of any NBA experience, ended up in stitches. So, it's something I'm used to now. It's just kind of the way I play the game. And, this year, I did a solid job. I didn't have too many, but obviously I had probably quite a few.
What is the, What is the difference in physicality from college to NBA and in the G League? Is like, I think there's a lot of critiques out there, like the NBA isn't as physical as it once was. What is your perspective on that?
I think, you know, the way the rules are naturally kind of takes away a little bit of that out of the game, obviously with the defensive 3-second rule, where a big guy can't sit in the paint for more than 3 seconds. You know, yeah. You see guys in college, you turn on a game, that center's not leaving the paint the entire possession. You know, obviously, you know, watch Syracuse or another team that plays zone or whoever it is, Zach Edey, you know, he can just sit in the paint as long as he wants. He can pitch a tent and stand in there and do whatever. So that, honestly, so spacing and opens up the floor, all of that. So there's less time that there's more people in the paint at the same time. And I think that's what takes away some of the physicality. You know, in college, people could double team me, triple team me, and kind of just stand in the paint on the side and just wait for me to make a move and come in and try to steal it or do whatever. That obviously can't happen in the league as often. And you see, you know, guys that are smart about it with Jokic, you know, there's a reason, you know, he's not getting doubled every play, is because of how the spacing works. If you come over, it's such an obvious read, either the, you know, opposite corner, opposite wing, and guys are so good that those open shots are too deadly. And it's the same thing kind of with Joel Embiid. And those guys that have to deal with that is very less, because there's, you know, less clutter in the paint. And, you know, I love the game both ways. But I think, you know, there's still, you know, you turn on the playoffs, you see, you know, guys mixing it up. It's still very physical. I promise you that.
Yeah, it's insane.
Is it a little bit more physical in the G League with a bunch of guys trying to prove themselves out there, throwing a few more elbows every now and then, or no?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's similar. I think especially in the G League, I think there's a lot less. You know, I think in the NBA, you have certain guys that, you know, are accustomed to getting certain calls throughout the game, and, you know, the refs kind of treat them in that way. And deservingly so. You know, LeBron's, you know, or Giannis, they're attacking the rim with such force, they're going to get fouled. They're too, you know, dominating of a physical presence to not get fouled. So that, you know, that kind of happens a lot. And the G League is less of that. You know what I mean? Guys aren't going to the free throw line every single possession. And even if you are, nobody's getting, you know, 20 free throws a game in the G League. So that makes it a little bit more physical of a game, is that there's a lot more, you know, I'd say probably fouling going on, but, you know, that's just kind of how it is. But, no, it's definitely physical in both the NBA and the G League. And I think in the NBA, the biggest difference, maybe it's not every single possession, but when it happens, the guys are so strong and big and, you know, powerful that you feel it for, you know, the next 3 weeks.
I hear you.
As much as the Big Ten is physical, arguably, probably the most physical conference in college basketball. When I think about that, I think of the picture of Connor face to face with the Illinois guy.
Yeah.
Which I really wish they would have thrown hands. Like I want to see
Connor wishes that too.
I know he does, and I've talked to Connor. We actually were going to have him on a couple weeks ago, and then something fell through. We're going to get him on here. That guy is quick. He's already got a job with Indiana or something. He's going to do great things as a coach, I'm sure. I just wanted to see you guys fight. I just want to see a 5-on-5 fist fight. But sometimes watching you, it felt like that. But even though the Big Ten is the most physical, they're double, triple teaming you, as you said, shit didn't really work, because you dropped, like, I mean, what do we got here? I had your stats pulled up for the, yeah. So we dropped, we're playing 32 minutes a game, and you're scoring, where are you at? What'd you have, 24 your senior year?
Yeah.
I mean, and my guy, you're out at the 3-point line, which is kind of in Iowa, you know, the uniqueness of an Iowa big guy, and what you brought to the table. I want to take it all the way back to your decision to come to Iowa, and what your recruiting looked like. A quick search on your Wikipedia says that you had offers from Georgetown, Georgia, Notre Dame, and some others. What was it about Iowa City and the Hawks that brought Luka to?
Yeah, there was a lot of things. I think first, Coach McCaffrey got on me pretty early in the recruiting process, like after my sophomore year, when there wasn't, you know, a ton of high major schools around. You know, I was mostly being recruited by some mid majors, some good A-10 schools and local schools. And I actually, you know, speaking of Connor, I played against Connor in an AAU tournament during a dead period. So no coaches could be there, but Fran could be there because his son was playing. So, you know, we all got in the huddle before the game and, you know, our coach was trying to hype us up. He was like, oh, there's a huge opportunity. Like, no coaches can be here, but you know, Iowa's head coach, he's like sitting right there and like watching his son play. So, you know, little did I know that, you know, that, you know, that moment would change, you know, the trajectory of my life and my career. But, you know, I played well and, you know, I ended up going to a camp with Connor a couple of weeks, a month later, called the Nike Elite 100 camp. And it was a similar situation. And it was during a dead period. No coach could be there. But, you know, coach was there watching Connor. And then all of a sudden I kind of noticed that, you know, Connor's playing on the far court, but, you know, coach is watching my game. And soon after that, you know, I think the day I got back home from that camp, he offered me, we had a great conversation on the phone. And, you know, I was just really excited about it. And I think the more I learned about Iowa, the program, you know, his, you know, system and the way it works over time, it just kind of made more and more sense. As you kind of mentioned, there's always been a level of versatility within, you know, the big man that he's had. In terms of guys that can shoot, guys that he could put on multiple spots on the floor. And that's something he was selling me on, you know, as soon as he, you know, watched me play was, you know, we can put you on a block. We can take you out here. We'll, you know, mix you around. We'll give you a lot of freedom on the offensive end. And I think when I started to blow up recruiting wise was, you know, kind of towards the end of my recruitment period, my last year of AAU. And, you know, I think I saw some teams that kind of just wanted me to be a post player, some teams that just wanted me to be a 3-point shooter. And, you know, I didn't really get that same, you know, feel as I did with coach. And I think that, you know, had to do with, you know, all these coaches were kind of coming around and trying to make up for lost time. And I'd already been talking to coach for, you know, 2 years and visited twice. And so it was just kind of a no brainer. I kind of felt throughout the whole process, you know, I think when some of the bigger schools, Louisville, I went and visited, I, you know, was wowed a little bit just kind of by the, you know, they were recently off a national championship. You know, Donovan Mitchell was my host when I got there. Like there was a, you know, there were some, you know, cool things about that. But I think for me, I understood what the smartest and best decision from myself and my family was. And, you know, it was a pretty easy choice.
Now, you went there, would have been after they got those little recruiting violations for doing a little.
Yeah. So when I got there, I couldn't take an official visit because of the sanctions. So I had to, you know, pay my way to get there and take an unofficial visit. And, you know, it was
they weren't providing escorts for the recruiting. Yeah. You were going.
No, I didn't get any of that. And, you know, fortunately, I really did make the right decision because I think every other school that, you know, I was choosing from, their coach got fired. You know, it was Georgetown, it was Louisville, it was Tom Crean at Indiana, it was Georgia, you know, Alabama, Avery Johnson, you know, I think he lasted one more year. You know, so I think every other school that was like in my top seven, top 10, I think the only one I think that was standing was Mike Bray. And, you know, obviously now he's done as well. So for me, I think, you know, kind of worked out that I, you know, I really did make the right choice.
Yeah. Well, if you want longevity, you come to Iowa, basically. That's so interesting to me. Kevin and myself, Drake, who's not here tonight, we weren't recruited like that. You know, like we had some, each one of us had one or two like semi interested
phone calls every now and then.
Yeah, a couple phone calls, right? Never were in a spot where we were developing like real relationships early on, sophomore, junior year in high school. And I always think, you know, it's something I can't connect with. So it's interesting to hear how your connection long before all these other schools, like you said, tried to make up for lost time, how that actually made a difference. I always wonder if that actually does make a difference or not, how early a school jumps in on a guy. And it sounds like it did for you. Obviously worked out for you, worked out for Iowa.
Hey, it's Peter Harmon, the food guru, here to talk about Gray's Gourmet To Go. At Gray's Gourmet To Go, we are madly and passionately in love with three things: chicken lips, pizza, and great food to go. Chicken lips are the most beloved food in Iowa City. And if you don't know what a chicken lip is, you're really missing out. Our second passion is pizza. We're hell-bent on making great pizza. Yeah, you can get cheap pizza anywhere. But if you're a real pizza aficionado, you gotta try our meatball pizza. It's made with a natural starter. And like sourdough bread, it's soft and crispy and light as air. And the third thing that we're wildly and passionately in love with is great food to go. We believe you want to feed your family something great at home, but you're too busy with life to stop and cook. That's why we built Gray's Gourmet To Go. So the next time you need to feed the gang and you don't feel like cooking, just come to graysgourmettogo.com.
I think, and now also, now I know how McCaffrey, you know, Coach Fran, he's in on all these guys. He just has to keep having kids so that he can go to these places without having, you know, he can be the parent and not the coach. He gets all the early scouting reports. That's funny. What were the expectations when you stepped in Iowa City? I mean, I got it right here. You played 20 minutes a game your freshman year. You scored 12 points a game. That's a pretty damn good as a freshman. What did you, 18, 19-year-old Luca, think was possible? What did you expect when you came to Iowa City?
You know, I think Coach, you know, really didn't give me, you know, much. I knew I had to go in and earn my spot. You know, I wanted to make sure I was starting as a freshman. That was a goal of mine. You know, and I think there was a lot of good players. You know, Cordell Pemsel was coming off like a ridiculous freshman year, you know, where he, you know, set the record for field goal percentage. So I knew there was some, you know, obviously with Tyler as well, there was guys there and Jack and Ryan. And so for me, you know, my goal was to be a starter. That was like my first goal once I got there, and I kind of had that in my head. And, you know, I ended up losing my starting job for a couple games within my freshman year and kind of bouncing back from that. But that, you know, that year was tough. I expected to be on a winning team, and I thought we were going to be that based on, you know, what they had done the year before and, you know, kind of the addition of me and you know, Jack. And so, you know, being on that team when we were 14 and 19 and just kind of felt like we, you know, couldn't win a game or couldn't stay within 20, you know, to anybody, it was tough. And it was one of the best things that happened to me as a player, as a leader, experience-wise, is being, you know, thrown in the fire and everything kind of turned into shit. You know, you kind of had to learn and adjust. So going into that summer, you know, it really changed who I was as a basketball player. I became more of a leader, more of a vocal point in that locker room and, you know, pushing guys in that summer to make sure that didn't repeat. And, you know, when we took that same team with the same guys, you know, and we were overtime away from the Sweet 16 the next year. So, you know, that was one of the, you know, early on, that was one of my, you know, favorite kind of accomplishments, was kind of turning the ship where, you know, who knows what happens if we have another year, my freshman year, my sophomore year, whether, you know, guys transfer or, you know, everything gets blown up, you know, who knows. So for us to make that kind of quick turnaround and, you know, people don't even remember that year now with all the success that we've had since then, you know, making the tournament pretty much every year after that, besides the COVID year, which we would have made the tournament as well. And so, you know, that was a big thing for me, was to make sure we turned it around into a winning program again.
Would you say that was a big change to your mentality? I don't know, like, if during your high school career, like, you were on I'm assuming a highly successful team, like a very winning team. Because I know, like, a lot of guys coming from their football teams, basketball too, I assume, is they come from winning teams, right?
Yeah.
They're really good players on really good winning teams. They're not used to losing, right? So would you say that having a year that you know, under 500 kind of changed your mentality a little bit or changed your perspective a little bit?
Yeah, up until that point, I never dealt with losing in that way. Like you said, you know, whether it's AAU or whatever, my teams were always, you know, really good or really competitive. Even, you know, when we were in the EYBL circuit, we made Peach Jam, like, you know, and so, you know, obviously it wasn't like, you know, every year, you know, my teams were always winning championships, but at the same time, like there wasn't that sense of, you know, not being able to win a game. And so that was a unique, feeling that I hated and we all hated and I never wanted to feel again. Mm-hmm. And so you know, it was something that definitely changed in me to understand that, you know, there's more that I can do, even if I am a freshman, to be a leader and get guys to play the right way. Because clearly, you know, after showing our sophomore year, we had enough my freshman year to be really good. And it took us to have that experience to learn and grow from it, to become the team that we came in the years, you know, later, obviously ending with being a 2 seed in the NCAA tournament. So it worked out.
Yeah. You know, and Kluver pointed out a little bit earlier is like, you know, you go from being a freshman, getting your minutes, you know, being a little bit of a contributor to, you know, your sophomore year, you kind of pop off a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about like the development, the transition, whether it was physical, mental, like what do you think helped you make that, that big come up, if you will?
Yeah, no, there was a lot of things. I think, my sophomore year, I had like kind of one of my best stretches, you know, or like early on my career, you know, in the Big Ten, I had, you know, I think 5 straight games where I had like 20 plus and we had a bunch of big wins in a row. And, you know, I think I learned a lot about myself that year. Prior to the year, I had to do that, get rid of that cyst that was in my stomach.
Yeah, what was up with that, man? You like had a baby removed from you or something.
I remember that. I just remember that. Holy shit. You had surgery in like
October and I didn't miss a game. It was a crazy story going back to my senior year of high school, where I noticed kind of a bump on my abs and I didn't really know what it was. And over time I'd asked a few people, but no one kind of really could, you know. People thought maybe I had a rib poking out or whatever. And I never really felt pain in that area until this summer going into my sophomore year. And I started feeling just really uncomfortable pain in my, you know, in my side. And I couldn't, you know, kind of stand straight up and wasn't eating as much. And these were all things that my family was noticing. And, you know, they kind of pushed me to really make sure that I got it checked out. And so, you know, we did an ultrasound. We did, you know, a bunch of different things. They found a thing was 10-pound cyst in my
bro,
abdomen.
10 pounds?
Guys just walking around pregnant playing basketball. Yeah.
It was the size of a collegiate volleyball, just kind of like in there. And so we had, you know. And
unreal.
Jesus Christ, Luca.
Yeah. It was crazy, you know, especially knowing that, like, you know, if I had played and got elbowed in that area and it popped, you know, that I would have died pretty much on the spot because it was connected to my spleen and all of that. So it was kind of a rough situation. But going into surgery, you know, the biggest risk was, you know, losing my spleen and probably not playing that year. But, you know, it wasn't like life, you know, threatening worries going into the surgery. And I was just really lucky to be at Iowa with the surgeons and the hospital and all of that. And they really took care of me. And like I said, it was a October surgery. And a month and a half, 2 months later, I was, you know, winning MVP in the Garden when we won the 2K Classic. So it was just kind of a crazy turnaround for me in a short couple of months. And I really had some good moments during that year. Obviously, I didn't have a full offseason because of that injury to kind of really be as prepared as I could be. And I think my sophomore year, I kind of noticed the biggest issue for me was kind of the more of the mental side of the game. I felt like I was a really inconsistent guy. I had, like I mentioned, that stretch of, you know, my 5 best games to that point in my career followed up by probably my first 4 worst games that I've played in my career at Iowa. And so I noticed that there was always like kind of an up and down with me. And that's why the next summer, I did a lot of work in a lot of different ways physically, but I made sure that I really put an emphasis on the mental side of the game. And that's kind of when I started my journey with meditation. And I think that really changed my life.
Yeah, I want to get into that.
We had your dad on, and he talked a little bit about that. I would love to hear your perspective about how that kind of changed your perspective, your approach to whether it be going to practice, approaching a game, shooting a free throw. Like, talk to me about like your mental preparation and your mental process for how you go about your business.
For sure. You know, I think because of how much I care and love the game of basketball, you know, I think it's a gift and a curse. You know, it brings me the gift of kind of having this endless inspiration and motivation to work as hard as I can on my game and get better and do all these things. But it also kind of makes me a little bit of an overthinker in the moment. And sometimes, I care so much about winning and playing well and showing all the work that I put in, and that kind of can affect my performance instead of kind of just letting go and allowing myself, to do the things that I've practiced so many times. That was something I struggled with. And, I think meditation allowed me to be present. It allowed me to kind of just go out there and enjoy the moment that was in front of me. And that was just playing a game of basketball. And I think that, my junior year, I think, 19 out of 20 Big Ten games, I had 20 plus. And so it felt like every night I was there, I was showing up. And I was, once I had that feeling of, kind of this confidence that no matter what was happening, when I was walking to an arena, I was gonna kill. And that kind of just, that mindset was addicting. And so I can continue to work on that side of my game, even now today, whether it's, therapy or, with the meditation and, journaling, different things that I can do to check up on myself mentally. Cause I know how hard I work physically on the game of basketball, how much I do in the off season. And I think a lot of players do. A lot of players work hard, but how hard do you work on the other side of the game, arguably the most important side of the game? That's kind of been my mentality going forward.
I think that's just really fascinating. Like, everyone talks about working hard physically in the weight room, conditioning, practice, working on your shot, whatever it may be. And even like mentally, but historically mentally, we thought it was like, okay, that's like watching film, getting your mental acuity right. I think it's just very recently coming into play about getting your mental strength, your, being like mentally coached as well. Does that make sense? Yeah. I think that's a very recent development in sports, like psychiatry. I guess not sports psychiatry, but just sports in general, is like focusing on how do we get this person in the right zone so that they're performing at their best.
And for sure.
I just think it's fascinating. I wish that we would have been more in tune with it during our playing days.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot of people like that who were struggling and dealing with different things, but I'm definitely lucky in a lot of ways with my family, my dad, to have that and him to have some knowledge on this kind of stuff pointing me in the right direction. And it's just really, it's something I still do every single day. It's something I always have a focus on is making sure, that I'm keeping my mental game sharp, because especially in the NBA, when you cross that bridge into the league, and you're not a guy who's top 10 picks, you're not playing 25 minutes a night off the bat, and you might not play seven games, and you get thrown in for 4 minutes at the end of the second quarter, and you got to make something happen. That's not the easiest mentally. So for me, I had to even have hyper focus kind of on that part of the game to be able to go into those moments and not worry about what happens if you aren't able to, succeed? Am I going to get another opportunity? Or, just knowing that, hey, I could play right well right here and I can get opportunity for the rest of the year. And you see it all the time, guys go down and some guys are ready for it and some guys aren't. And so for me, I always want to make sure that I'm one of those guys who is always ready. And I felt like, this year, that's something I did really well. I think every time I got an opportunity, I think there was 13 games I played above 10 minutes, and we were 8-5 of those games. In 14 minutes, I averaged 12-4. So for me, that kind of showed that I was always ready. Those minutes weren't always consistent. I might not play three games, I'd get thrown in, or it wasn't that. But the focus on the mental game is what helped me be able to go out there and just be myself.
You don't got to get ready if you stay ready, right?
For sure.
I've got a question that I think maybe everybody listening can potentially get value from. And it has to do with that being mentally locked in. everybody needs to be mentally locked in for something, right? For you, it's your basketball player. For us, we played football. Maybe not now so much. I was about to say, like, oh yeah, when we sit down to do a podcast, we got to really mentally lock in, but it's not really true. But there's people out there who are, they have families, they have careers that are high pressure, high stress. They have hobbies, or they compete in, you know, sports in their adult life to stay competitive, and they want to stay mentally locked in. And everybody at some point is not mentally locked in, right? That's a state we sort of enter in and out of. You can't always be there in your life 24/7. You'll be fried, right?
For sure.
When you are, you know, it gets, you know, it's game day and it's getting close to game time, and you start to that process of, I need to get into the zone. And you know, you're not in the zone, or sometimes maybe you're in the middle of a game and you realize, I'm a little bit less locked in here than I should be. Are there any things that you use as little tips or tricks to help you flip the switch, help you kind of realize, I'm not where I need to be, step away from the situation, and then come back into it with a different mindset?
That's a really good question. Because also, you know, you can go into a game with the right mindset and feel really good and feel like you're locked in, and then, you know, you miss your first two shots, and then, you know, what do you do from there?
It kicks you out of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's something that, you know, it's probably going to be a lifelong battle, because it's always going to be hard to, you know, everyone's got a plan until they get hit in the face. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for me, in the moment, you know, because of meditation, what I've done, it's, I always, if I feel like I'm slipping or I need to refocus in a certain situation, I always just kind of focus on my breath. And, you know, I take a few seconds, whether it's on the free throw line or in a timeout, and, you know, I kind of go through, I just kind of slow my breathing down and just kind of, you know, you feel the breath go in and out. And in that moment, when you're thinking about your breath, you know, sometimes, you know, I'll count seconds on the inhale, hold it, count some seconds on the hold, and then let it go. I'll do that maybe a couple times. And in those couple times, I wasn't thinking about that last minute shot. I was thinking about, you know, the breath, my breath and all of that. Yeah. And,
kind of that, press the reset button, huh?
That kind of can just kind of take you a little, you know, bit back. And, you know, and I think there's different ways that I'm working on it as well. You know, and I think there's something called the beginner's mind in terms of the mindset that goes into somebody that's a beginner, is they're so curious. And if they mess up, you know, it doesn't matter, because they, you know, they want to get better, and they want to have that curiosity. And I think you see that, like, for me, that's when I'm like in the off season, I'm learning a new move, and, you know, I might miss it 10 times, but I won't get frustrated, because I'm excited about learning this new move. And I think what I'm trying to do now is take that approach and mindset into the games, you know, and enjoy the moment, be curious, have fun in the moment, at the same time with being locked in. So then if I miss a shot, then I'm not that worried about, you know, because, you know, I'm out here.
I like that.
I love beginner's mind. I seriously believe that mental training is like the next frontier of athlete development. 'Cause like everyone's done all the studying and found the right strength and conditioning programs, the nutrition, the training programs. I really think the mental aspect is the next phase of sports. I think it's awesome.
I agree.
We've got a decent listenership to this show, and we have a private sort of chat that we have. We call them the Walk-On Army. And we, I sent a little note to them that we were having you on, and if anybody wanted to ask a question, I think we got a good one here. It says, people
first.
Okay.
Who you got in the finals?
We got the Nuggets.
The Nuggets.
Right. Grant here is currently in Denver, by the way, from Denver, Nuggets fan. So.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I appreciate those words about Jokic, by the way.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, right now, you know, he's my favorite player in the league guy. And this year, getting to go against him, you know, I think two or three times where I played pretty heavy minutes in those games and was guarding him was such a cool experience for me. And even, you know, obviously, you know, I wanted to play in the playoffs, and being a two-way guy, you can't play in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But just being there and getting to see him for, you know, five games straight and see it up close and, you know, watch his pregame routine, all of that kind of stuff was a lot of fun for me. And I think I learned a lot from it and the way he plays the game. It was just more and more impressed by him and everything he's done. And, I think he's the best player in the league right now. And I think he's showing that on the national stage.
Is there anyone else you'd like to kind of take a look at their game, try to steal a thing or two of what they're doing?
Yeah, I mean, there's a long list of guys that I'm looking at every game. I think that's the fun part of being in the league as well. When I'm playing or even when I'm not playing, just, getting to see who do I get to watch today, Mm-hmm. And, get to see these guys out there. And so, and especially within my own team, learning from Carl Anthony Towns and Rudy Gobert and Naz Reid and those guys, it's been incredible for me. They're all three unique and different bigs, but they're all so effective in their own ways. And so I get to learn from that every single day, which has been, I think, part of the reason I got so much better this year you are some of the five people you're around the most. So when you're around that kind of high level, kind of group of your position, you can only high tide raises all boats. So those guys were, really, really good for me and helping me get a lot better. But, Vucevic is another guy from the Bulls that I've watched a lot of and I enjoy watching him play. I think, there's some things that I take from a lot of guys, Kevin Love, one thing I'm trying to help get better at this summer is how good he is at charge taking and how he's kind of mastered that skill, being one of the best charge takers in the league. So I've been watching a lot of film on him and how he does that. But there's so many guys, you watch Joel Embiid and some of the things he does in the post and in the block, some of the moves he makes. I'm one of those guys that's always curious about, seeing something and not understanding quite, what did he just do and kind of working on it and adding it to my game as much as I can. So there's so many guys, and I'm lucky to play in the NBA where I get to see these guys every single night.
Yeah, you're naming you're naming some dudes there. And you're talking about, it's a good little unintentional segue back to the question about development. You're talking about how ways that you can develop. This person asked, lots of credit to you and your dad for the offseason workouts and kind of the intensity that you guys bring to those, for a lot of the development that went on in your college career, but, even to this day. But then sometimes those same people will discredit or fail to mention Fran and company, right? And the coaching staff in Iowa City and how they helped you develop as well. And this person wanted to know if you can speak to how Coach McCaffrey and the Iowa staff specifically helped you develop, maybe in different ways, even than you and your dad by yourself in the offseason or anything like that. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, for sure. I think the biggest thing that I think the reason I think I love playing for Coach McCaffrey and the way he coaches, I think that the way his system works, especially on the offensive end, is there's so much freedom. We come down, we don't really run a set until the second half. So it's all about reading the game and what's in front of you. So when you play within an offense like that, you have to learn. So much. And so I think for me, it's something that's helped me in the league. And help me get on the floor when a coach kind of sees that, I'm reading the game and I'll just go up there and I'll set a flare screen when I see we need some action on this side or some, I'll cut when I have to, because these are things that, are so natural to me because that's what I had to deal with every day in practice. That's what I had to learn. We're running, in practice, we're doing drills where you can't even dribble. We're playing 5-on-5 half court. You can't dribble. You got to cut, move, flare screen, pin down, you got to come up with these plays in your head and kind of read the game as it's in front of you. I think that just kind of builds you as a high IQ guy. And that's the reason, Coach McCaffrey recruited me and a lot of the guys he recruits is I kind of already had some of that IQ going into coming to Iowa, but, I think it took it to the next level having to do that. In high school, we would come down and run a set every single time down.
Right.
And that limits, your kind of creative thinking as an offensive player.
True.
Both on the ball and off the ball, and especially in the NBA, if you're not one of those main guys, how good you can be at creating offense without the ball in your hands is going to help you get on the floor. And so that's something I really thank Coach McCaffrey for is kind of establishing that in my mind and getting me a lot better in that way. And so with that freedom, you know, as well on offensive end and going to being in different positions, it got me comfortable behind the 3-point line. It got me comfortable on the block. You know, I feel like I could, I still, you know, I can score from any part of the court. And, you know, that's a lot because of, you know, the way Coach McCaffrey, you know, kind of used me and uses everyone, is he allows you to have that freedom. And, you know, there's a lot you learn on the daily being around that high level of a coach, whether it's in film, the amount of film we watch, the way he breaks down the game. You know, even just, you know, Connor was one of my, you know, best friends. So we'd go up to the house, watch games with Coach and just kind of like, you know, just kind of just chilling, you know, see what games are on college. And, you know, I remember, I think it was my freshman year. You know, I think there was some game on and some guy, you know, one of Coach's pet peeves is, you know, when some guy, you know, kind of goes for offense, rebounds and fouls and they're in the bonus. So they're shooting two free throws. So, you know, you're kind of fouling 94 feet away from the basket. And we're all just sitting there kind of like, you know, just watching the game. And, you know, the guy fouls. I'm like, damn, that's stupid. Coach said, if you ever fucking do that, I'm going to take your ass out. And so I kind of knew right there, you know, you get those little nuggets and, you know what not to do. And so I think just being around him in general, and I think, you know, the coaching staff, you know, with the summer workouts that we did and you know, all of the different things we – you know, all the different situations we were put into in the off season, whether it was one-on-one or, you know, pick up all those things. And I think for me, having Jack Nungy, Ryan Creener, Cordell Pemsel, Tyler Cook, these were guys I was battling with every single day. You know, these are all high level, you know, division one, you know, centers. You know, Ryan, if it wasn't for me, you know, he would have been a starter at many other schools. And same with Cordell, same with Jack. You know, Jack showed that he went to Xavier and was, you know,
balling.
You know, balling. And now he's in the, you know, NBA draft process, and, you know, Ryan's killing it overseas, and Tyler had a really good year in the G League this year. And so you see that, you know, that talent that we had in that front court, and that's what I was going against every single day. I think that helped me so much. And, you know, people really don't know, like, going into my junior years, like, the battles me and Jack had, you know, there was a while before the season started where I don't think anybody kind of knew who our best player was going to be between the two of us, and how, you know, dominant we both were in practice going against each other every day. You know, I was dropping 25, he was dropping 25, you know, it was all over the place. And you know, we were both, you know, playing at a high level. Unfortunately, you know, he tore his ACL early in that year. And, you know, I think, you know, he had some struggles with his health, but obviously he showed Xavier he's one of the best, you know, was one of the best centers in the country this year. And so that's, you know, that's who I was going against. So I think that combination of being around really high talented players and a high level coaching staff kind of got me to improve my game.
That's an incredibly elaborate answer. I'm just sitting here just letting you roll. And that was, and you're so well-spoken too, which is like, you know, which is nice for a guy that just runs a podcast. We're going to get to the camps that you're about to be having, because we've got a bunch of them coming up now, even some later in September, which anybody out there that's listening right now, I mean, why would you not, as you listen to this guy talk, how could you not go and have your kiddo learn from this guy? I do want to mention something quick. Obviously, the relationship between you and your dad has been highlighted through, you know, his social media while you were playing, and your guys' work together on a lot of the stuff that you do. That can be, and I experienced this myself. My dad was my coach from third grade, AU basketball, football, all the way through high school, as he was a high school basketball and football coach. And that relationship can get tricky sometimes. I have friends, teammates who had their dads coach them. And sometimes that coach relationship kind of overtakes the dynamic, even when you're not at practice or at games. And it seems as though you and your father manage it so damn well. I have to imagine there's been a couple times over the years where you get chippy at each other once or twice. How do you manage that, and what, why do you think it works so well between you guys?
Yeah, no, I think over time our, you know, relationship has changed a lot. you know, especially now from when I was a kid, it's a lot different. You know, I think at the end of the day, you know, when I was a kid, you know, my dad was my role model. He was who I looked up to and I wanted to be like. So, you know, obviously he was really tough on me in a lot of different ways. But, you know, even when I couldn't understand, you know, what his vision was, I wanted to get better at basketball. I knew that. So sometimes I would just have to kind of deal with what I had to deal with because I knew where I wanted to be. And, you know, it felt like, you know, if I listened to what he said that, you know, he did it himself. He was a Division I player and I wanted to be a Division I player. So, you know, I felt like I was listening to the right person. So, you know, it was definitely tough and there's definitely bumps along the road. But I think, you know, he did a really good job of adjusting the way that he coached me and trained me as I got older. You know, he doesn't, you know, there is no more, you know, me playing a shitty game and him yell screaming at me after the game anymore. You know, I'm in the NBA. You know, this is a right. lot different. You know, he might have suggestions. He might, you know, say, oh, you should have done this, or like, you know, I see this, how about this? And you know, that helps a lot. And I think he turned, especially in college, and into more of that support role as well. Or during the season, he knew I was getting coached hard by coach and his coaching staff, that he didn't really need to do that as much. He kind of, you know, needed to support and then offer his kind of nuggets when they were, you know, kind of available. And, you know, that really helped, you know, being able to look in the crowd and just see him there every single game is something that, you know, helped me a lot mentally. Just kind of having that, you know, that comfortable, you know, feeling when you're in a, you know, crowd of, you know, 10,000 people that all, you know, kind of hate you, you know, being able to have him there and kind of settle me down, you know, it definitely helped a lot.
Who are you pointing at in this picture? That's intimidating. Damn. It's like, you know, what is it? The Army picture or something? It's like, we want you. Yeah, this is the Luka Garza version. I want you to come to the Luka Garza Academy. You've got several of these up here right now. You've got, so, you know, as when this comes out later this week, next weekend, June 16th, you're running a skills camp in Urbandale. And then we've got the father son camp the day after that, or 2 days after that. And then you've even got some big camps in here as well, right here, July 1st, July 2nd, later in September. Talk to me about these camps and what goes down at these. These have to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, this is year two of the, you know, Luka Garza Academy. Last year was a lot of fun. I think we had around 500, 600 kids across wow. The different places that we were. And this year we're, I have a busy summer, so I'm trying to fit as much time as I can. But we're going to be all in Urbandale, Iowa, and Des Moines at Beyond Basketball. June 16th is going to be 3rd through 8th grade. So it's going to be the younger kids session, and that's going to be a lot of fun. June 17th is going to be special. We have, you know, me and my dad, obviously we've talked about that relationship. And so I think it's going to be cool, you know, Father's Day weekend to do a kind of like a father son, you know, camp, you know, for, you know, dads and their kids, and, you know, it can be a grandpa or, you know, whatever, you know, the case may be. But, you know, that's going to be fun. It's going to be a different type of camp, but at the same time, it's going to be special. And in June 18th, there won't be, you know, a camp. There'll just be a breakfast that will be done. Hy-Vee's going to be, you know, it's going to be a pancake breakfast. They're going to have, you know, we're just going to kind of sit around and talk. There's a Q&A, all of that sort of stuff. You know, so that'll be a lot of fun. And then, you know, June 30th, I'll be back to do another 3rd through 8th grade camp, and also in Urbandale, Iowa. Same kind of thing. And then after that, the 1st and 2nd will be kind of the older kids. That'll be 9th through 12th grade. And I think this will be a little bit more, you know, advanced in terms of skill development. But I'm looking forward to that as well. And, you know, it should be a lot of fun. Last year was so much fun. And I think, like we said, with, you know, my career in basketball, all of that, after having that first experience, the 2nd, 3rd, 4th one's always going to get better. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
That the father son camp is such a cool idea. That's so sick.
Yeah.
Can I bring my dad? If you knew my dad, you'd be like, I don't think that's going to work out. I'd love to see him He actually coaches freshman basketball.
When the day comes that basketball ends for you, are you looking to get into coaching or keep doing like this camp stuff? What's the future hold for Luka Garza 10 plus years down the road?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a, you know, I'm always a guy who's kind of thinking about a lot of different things at the same time. I think for me, right now, the way I probably am going to head is more into sports media and being an analyst or, you know, a play-by-play or not a play-by-play, a commentator.
Podcaster.
Yeah. Honestly, I am, you know, kind of thinking about starting my own podcast.
Do it. Take over the reins, man. We need the Hawk fans to listen to something else other than us so I can quit.
But yeah, so know that I think sports media is definitely kind of a passion of mine, talking about the game, watching the game, doing all that kind of stuff. And I've done some things. I did the players union offers a broadcaster U kind of program. I did that last summer.
Nice. Oh, cool.
Fun and gave me a lot of real life experience and created a reel for me and stuff like that. So, you know, I think that's something that I'd be kind of natural with. And, you know, who knows besides that, you know, I don't know about coaching yet or front office or something else, but we'll see.
G-Bone, anything from Denver? Any more questions from Colorado?
Yeah, no, I got a couple questions for you, Luca. First one, though, are you the best viola player in basketball?
If there is another one out there, he might be better than me. I wasn't too good, but
I'll say, come on, you can give yourself some credit. Come on.
If there isn't another one out there, then yeah, I'm on the mountain.
So then, kind of on top of that, is there anything like you might have learned or developed, like skills wise, or just like, you know, it's a hard skill to learn an instrument like that, right? That may have transitioned to basketball and helped you out.
Yeah, I think it's more kind of my like perspective towards life. My dad and my mom both pushed me in that direction. Kind of just have more balance within my life, do a lot of different things, kind of see what I like. And, you know, I think playing the viola allowed me to do that. And it also kind of taught me that I can work on a lot of different things at once. And kind of what we were just talking about, like me doing things, you know, as a rookie in the NBA, I'm already kind of starting to figure out what is my next step after basketball. And, you know, that's hopefully not for another 15 years, but, you know, that kind of stems from, you know, the way I was brought up, and it was always kind of trying new things, exploring and you know, learning as much as you can.
Yeah. Have I been pronouncing it wrong? How'd you say it? I said viola. Did you say
viola?
Viola? Viola. Shoot. Okay. So my bad. And then this kind of piggybacks then to my next question, though. Speaking of mispronunciations, have you heard Tyler say the word Timberwolves before?
I have not.
Because it might shock you.
Timberwolves.
What?
Wolves. Wolves. The Wolves. The Timberwolves.
I think you got the incorrect spelling of that. There's an L in there somewhere.
I don't know, man. I don't know. It's kind of like the G in lasagna rolls silent, you know.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone's saying that.
I don't think that applies to both areas.
But. Okay. All right.
Yeah. And then my last kind of thing for you is, so being from the D.C. area, D.C., I feel like, is underrated as a sports area for developing athletes. There's obviously you guys like Chase Young are from there as well. And then I'm a lacrosse fan, so there's a bunch of guys coming out of that area as well. What do you think makes D.C. What is allowing D.C. to produce so many great athletes?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I think D.C. is – by far the best high school basketball area in the country. And I don't think it's particularly close. When you think about the guys that have come from the area, Kevin Durant, you know, Victor Oladipo, Jeremy Grant, Sharon Grant, you know, when you think about schools like DeMatha and Gonzaga and Paul the Sixth and St. John's, and, you know, the list goes on, you know, for days and days about how many great players that we've had come from that area. You know, in my high school league alone, you know, Sadiq Bey, Josh Hart, you know, myself, Justin Robinson, you know, that's four NBA guys right there in like the last, you know, decent 8 years. So, you know, when you think about, you know, and, you know, obviously it shows within our AAU program. The AAU program I played for is Team Takeover, which has been kind of one of the most dominant in the EYBL. So, you know, I think the combination of, you know, the talent around the area and always having to play against those people, as well as, how connected DC, Maryland, and Virginia is. You know, it's the, you know, I say I'm from the DMV. You know, it doesn't really matter where you live within the DMV, but you're, it's all kind of one place. You know, it's pretty much the same. It's pretty much the same state. You know, how close they are, Northern Virginia, DC, and Maryland. You know, I'd live in Virginia. I'd go to school in DC. I'd go practice in Maryland after school. Like, that's how close they are. So when you're all kind of exposed to that many guys at that level of talent on a daily basis in high school and in AAU, you know, there's nowhere, you know, else to go but up. So, you know, there's been, I think per capita, you know, DC has the highest percentage of guys in the league or top three. You know, I forget what the stat is. And I think, you know, Maryland is like a close second, or Maryland might be ahead of DC, but they're both in the top five. So that, you know, kind of shows the talent that we have. And, you know, same thing in football and other sports as well.
Love it. Well, Luca, we really, really appreciate your time. Seriously, we, before we finally got this to work, we had some tech issues, but we figured it out. It's the world we live in today. So happy that we got to have you on. If you guys are listening right now and you're like, damn, I really want to take my kid, maybe even participate yourself, if you're the dad, in the Luca Garza camp, lucagarzaacademy.com. Is that right?
Yes.
There it is. lucagarzaacademy.com. You can sign up for those three camps. Go get better, go improve, and learn from the man. 55. Thank you so much, Luca.
Yeah, thank you guys. Had a lot of fun. Appreciate
have
you.
Have a good one.
Yeah.
Everybody, thanks for listening. Till next time. Peace.
Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you want more, you can check us out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube by searching Washed Up Walk-Ons. And if you're interested in supporting the show, head over to patreon.com/washedupwalkons, where you can find bonus podcasts, merchandise, and other cool perks. Best part, half of your subscription benefits the kids at UI Children's Hospital. We'll see you next time. Hawks by a million.